Episode 80, Extra Features, Mel Gibson, Part 2. I'm Kevin.
I'm Simon.
I'm Karen.
Intern.
And I'm Deb.
Are you still Kevin's girlfriend?
I think I'm on probation.
Oh, okay.
Oh, dear.
Did you guys make up since last episode?
I don't know. I think I may have to stop him with some more pie.
What kind of pie would that be?
Apple pie, of course.
Okay.
We don't go for depth around here.
What does that mean? We don't go for depth around here. Jeez. For now. All right, let's crank this thing up. Where we... In our last episode, we finished up with Mel Gibson in Hamlet. And on Sesame Street.
That was awesome.
Monsterpiece Theater. Classic stuff. Well, sadly, he came back and did another Lethal Weapon in 1992. Directed by Richard Donner. Stars Mel Gibson, Danny Glover, Joe Pesci, and Rene Russo. Is there a plot to number three? I think there's a cop who's bad, who's building houses or something like that. And anyway. Blah.
No, there is
no
plot.
Are we really coming to the Lethal Weapon movies by number three? Are we really coming to the plot, or are we just coming to see the characters we know do stuff?
No, we aren't.
I would like to think, because two is pretty decent, so I thought three would have been pretty solid, too.
One and two were great.
But Rene Russo is just such a bad actress. I'm watching the whole movie going, you're awful.
And Joe Pesci was so underutilized compared to how great he was in number two. I think they could have built more around him in that movie because he just kind of fell flat.
Well, I kept going, okay. Let me show your house, Raj. I'll show your house, Raj.
When was the drive-thru one two or three?
What's the drive-thru?
Drive-thru was two.
They always have you at the drive-thru.
That was two.
Okay.
And three is when he becomes a house insurance guy.
Right.
And then he becomes something
and
else.
Dyes his hair blonde.
And we find out the scheme he was running.
And just as a side note, this movie was released just after Joe Pesci won his Academy Award for Goodfellas.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Okay.
And they go to the hockey game, and they run around the ice.
Oh, yeah.
This is just a horrible, horrible movie. Awful. Mm-hmm. And they only catch the guy and figure out who it is because they installed these extra cameras he didn't know about. So they know who it is. I'm like, really? This is the plot? It was awful.
You know, performance-wise, it's pretty much the same as the other ones.
So. Oh, the performance is fine.
They gave exactly the same performance.
It's just dull.
And again, just lacking in script and plot.
Kind of like a sitcom. Like, you take characters that are well-established and just throw them into situations and, like, it's a reactive situation.
And, you know, like you say, the buddy-buddy aspect of Riggs and Murtaugh is still there, but, you know, again, plot-wise, I think, sadly lacking.
100% with Kevin.
And did you see this one, Bob? Or?
No, smart guy.
Well, the next film on our list is Mel's directorial debut, and it's a film called Man Without a Face. It came out in 1993. Young Nick Stahl wants to leave home, but he can't make the grade. He needs to get into boarding school. So he finds the disfigured recluse living near next door is actually a former teacher who's been disfigured, and they form a bond, and he learns with him. Pretty exciting. It's based on the novel by Isabel Holland. And, Man Without a Face. Kind of forgettable.
I liked it though. I thought it had some touching moments.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly not a, you know, blockbuster dollar-wise kind of movie, but I thought it was pretty solid.
Wow, that was a really great description of this movie. Why you liked it? Because it was solid.
You falling asleep?
Yeah, I was just thinking about watching Man Without a Face, going, "What? This is just." I feel in the movie, like, the big thing is they think he had a sexual experience with the boy, but he didn't really have one. But they never show you that in the movie. Like, there was nothing in that movie to tell me that happened. Not even, maybe, because I read in the book, there's more, like, a pool scene and a couple other scenes.
I think there's a lot more, like, homosexual content in the source material, but Mel Gibson took it out because...
Well, that bugged me, because this is so ambiguous.
It's ambiguous, but then...
And that's what bugged me.
But I think that's what plays on... It's ambiguous because people were making the assumptions about what had happened, and I think that's what they were trying to capture a little bit more.
But I never got that, though. I never understood even the townspeople going to him, because obviously he's trying to help the boy. Do you know what I mean? And the townspeople are like, oh, you're having a sexual, we gotta stay away. I'm like, what?
Because, you know, in human nature, it's sort of like we're programmed to think the negative or before we think anything positive. So we...
But isn't that profile?
I think this, but the statement, there's a cliche where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah.
The only problem I had with this movie is that there was no smoke.
That's it. There's no reason for...
I mean, there isn't, but I think human nature... In human nature, there is a predisposition to lean and think towards the negative.
They just didn't put enough actually on the movie table to help the audience, though. I think that's one of the differences between, like,
a movie. Seemed like a stretch.
Yeah, like, because in a book, you've got hundreds of pages to, like, build things or drop hints. But in a movie, like, if you don't see it or a character doesn't refer to it, there's not much to go on. Like, it's not like... it has to be there or... We're left in the dark. So.
Well, I think that would be a good question or something that, you know, you'd like to see in the extras. Was that done deliberately?
Yeah, do you think this was Mel?
Right.
As director and actor exerting some kind of control to say, I don't want even the hint of homosexuality towards my character or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if people think that's one thing. They're wrong. But I want this to be shown as a wholesome and just... My bitterness towards my face and overcoming that.
Yeah, I think that would be an interesting question.
How does he overcome it, though? I don't think he overcomes his face ever.
Probably not, no.
I think he wants to accept it, but doesn't overcome it.
And just a note on the makeup, oh my goodness, did anybody else have a problem with the fact that his face is perfectly bisected down the middle? I mean...
I don't know, I saw the movie so long ago that I probably wouldn't remember that.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the thing, is that I just found this movie a bit self-indulgent, which I guess is to be expected with a movie star's directorial debut. Like, I wondered if he was sniffing around for an Oscar nomination. Look, I'm a pretty star, I made myself ugly, give me the Oscar.
Is it wrong if I'm singing Billy Idol, Eyes Without a Face, it is got no human race? It's all I could do the whole time, it was all I'm singing. Sorry.
All right. I don't think I would buy it. I mean, it's certainly not something I would, you know, want to watch again and again.
I think it's rentable, though.
But I would say rentable.
Oh,
yeah.
No,
I wouldn't bother with this one again.
No, but I've never seen it, so if you've never seen it, rent it.
I would rent it again just because it's been a long time since I've seen it. It'd be interesting to see how it holds up.
You have other things to watch, though.
All right, next movie on the list is Maverick, another Richard Donner film with Mel Gibson, Jodie Foster, and James Garner. Bette Maverick, needing money for a poker tournament, faces various comic mishaps and challenges, including a charming woman thief. Anybody want to kick this one off?
Karen.
Yeah.
Your favorite.
It is one of my favorite Mel Gibson movies. I thought the humor was brilliant. And also playing off the old television series Maverick, a lot of similarities from the television show.
In a lot of ways, this is the same.
I guess. I mean, again, having not seen it in a while, or the show for that matter.
Well, because I'm not going to blow who his father is, even though this we can spoil it if we want to.
We could spoil it.
His father.
The movie's like 20
years
old.
His father is a Maverick, right?
Yeah.
So you could say that James Garner Maverick is pretending to be Zane Cooper, Marshall. And it's his son, Mel Gibson. Right?
I also like it.
The same name.
I did like it. I thought Jodie Foster was good.
Mm-hmm.
Good comic foil with her. And, I was impressed. Because I went into it not really expecting a lot. But I had, the first time I watched it, I was with my dad, who clearly remembered the television show. And so he could see the parallels and the similarities and sort of had to fill me in a little bit. But I did enjoy it. I liked it a lot more than I thought I would have.
I was just amazed to see Jodie Foster doing the comedy. In her adult career, she has not ventured into comedy often, which is just a shame, because she's lovely in this movie.
It really worked.
And Graham Greene as a Native American sidekick.
Yeah.
Beautiful. especially right on the heels of his Dances with Wolves part.
You didn't like it.
I know. I enjoy Maverick. I think Mel Gibson is excellent. I think the card playing is really enjoyable. I think the Jodie Foster playoff. I have a lot of issues with when they go to save the money from the Indians, the pretend Indians. I thought that was really weak because it looked like it was shot on a set, on a back lot. It looked awful.
I mean, again, not seeing it recently.
Well, I watched it recently. I had a little issues with that. I love the bank scene. I thought the bank scene was fantastic because it's got a great cameo of somebody in there if you haven't seen that.
I remember, wasn't there a scene with a snake?
Yes.
That I really hate snakes, but that scene was really funny.
Yes.
So, that I remember.
I think Maverick's enjoyable. I don't think it's a must buy or a must see, but if you want a nice Sunday, I call these Sunday new afternoon movies. It's kind of nice.
I disagree with you completely.
Wow.
This is a must buy.
I agree. I would.
This is a great movie. Yeah. This is a lot of fun. And it's one of my favorite Mel Gibson movies.
I said that too, and he rolled his eyes at me.
Well, you're right and he's wrong.
I didn't roll my eyes at
I could hear it on the phone.
I love Maverick.
On the phone.
Jodie Foster is great. And
rolling his eyes on the phone, yeah.
James Garner is a lot of fun. I mean, you could tell they were just having a great time making this movie, and it just comes through in every scene.
Are you trying to eat?
And I will say it's a great premise. It's a great premise for a movie, just as it was a great premise for a TV show. Like a card sharp who is completely unheroic. Like that's what I love, is that like Mel Gibson, who usually is Mr. Square Jaw, you know, even when he's playing characters like Murdaugh and he's always, but he's still acting in a heroic vein. Here he's just like, you know, screw this. I just want to get my money and get out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And not, you know, like, he's vain, he's cowardly, he's a dandy, you know. It's fun.
It was fun. I think there are not enough fun movies made. And I think, again, it shows that Mel Gibson didn't get typecast into the action hero or the dramatic lead. He could do humor as well. So I think that, you know, shows him in a good light. Mm-hmm. He's not typecast. He's capable of handling all different kinds of roles.
Yep. Bob didn't see this, so we'll move on to the next movie on the list, which is the big one, Braveheart, which won Mel Best Picture and Best Director Oscars, as he directed this and starred in it. Along with Sophie Marceau and Patrick McGoohan, he plays William Wallace, a commoner who unites the 13th century Scots in their battle to overthrow English rule. And, Braveheart, who wants to kick it off? Bob, you want to start this one? Or Karen? You haven't seen Braveheart?
No.
In 20 years, you haven't seen Braveheart?
No, I haven't, but I do know some of the lines. I know the part where he says, "We will surrender our land and stuff, but we will never surrender our freedom." That's all.
No, they can never take our land. They can take our land, but they can never take our freedom.
That's it.
Yeah.
Okay. I get it.
Well, please. I mean, he just saw The Usual Suspects for the first time the other day. So, you know, maybe by the time we get around to this
I think we have to take away his land and his freedom.
We clearly have to do something.
We need to take away his copies of Mamma Mia and Hotel for Dogs for Vengeance.
Okay.
All right.
Back to Braveheart and the 13th century Scots. I love this movie.
Like, what can you say about this movie that hasn't already been said?
It stinks. Oh God, Simon's ready to say something.
But I mean, this movie has really jumped into everyday culture. I mean, because now people can quote the movie and do endlessly. I mean, William Wallace, now everybody knows who William Wallace is.
I think a lot of people I'm a fan of historical movies to begin with. But I think when you have a movie that is done as well as this, it brings in a whole other fan base that will get into the concept of a historical movie, a real battle, a real hero, someone who really has something to fight for.
And we have to give lots of love to Patrick McGoohan as the evilest, most ass-kicking bad guy in probably all of the entire 1990s. I mean,
Edward Longshanks.
The Hammer of the Scots. I mean, he's the most visible villain since Darth Vader.
I'm with you.
Yeah. I mean, like, this guy could, like, basically He's Darth Vader without the helmet. He just goes around and, like, smites people and blows up villages. He's like a medieval Death Star.
Looks good in a kilt.
I have to say, this has one of my favorite movie scenes in it at all times. When Patrick McGoohan walks in and he goes, Daddy, meet my new defense, whatever, and picks the guy up and goes, tosses him right out the window. Mike, you win!
Yeah.
I also have a great deal of respect for Mel Gibson as a director of this movie.
Yes, this was a big, big production.
Big undertaking, and those battle sequences.
Period battle sequences. Excellent.
I can't even wrap my brain about how you begin to film it. And then edit
it. Teach everybody how to sword fight.
And the cinematography and everything that goes along with it. I just, you know, can't wrap my brain around that. I don't know what's going on.
And we have to show, and we also have to show a little love to Sophie Marceau, who plays the Princess of Wales. It's an interesting part. I mean, I know it's not historically accurate. The actual Princess of Wales, I think, was like 10 when William Wallace died.
Yeah.
We'll forgive it because, hey, it's Hollywood.
Well, and I think you do have to give a little bit of creative license to those kinds of things as well. So,
I mean, what a great movie.
Kevin, any comments?
I like this movie quite a lot. It's a bit of a chore to watch now.
It's long.
Yeah.
It is long.
It's length, but like the performances are great. Sophie Marceau is quite likable. This was, I think, her introductory film, at least in English. And, you know, I like it quite a bit. Patrick McGoohan is great, the prisoner. Are you alright there? I have no complaints about this movie. It's a lot of fun. And you know, okay, check it out.
Absolutely.
It's a buy.
It's a buy.
Oh, this is a buy.
Buy on Blu-ray.
Buy on Blu-ray.
Is it out on Blu-ray? Anyone?
Definitely no.
It is?
It's up there.
Besides Kevin.
And watch the extra features on the Blu-ray. Like, this would be a fun movie to, like, go behind the scenes and find out
how
they did it.
You know, and again, I mean,
no CGI.
And how much the footage was not used because of how long it already is and how much got cut.
Right.
Oh, yeah, this could have been a two-part movie easily.
Oh, clearly.
Moving on.
Alright, next movie.
Ransom.
Wait a minute, we can't discredit Pocahontas. It's a Disney movie.
Yes, he did Pocahontas.
I thought we were saving this for the animation.
Well,
just making note of it.
You know, he was the voice of John Smith in Pocahontas. We got to give
him
credit.
And he's in character, so he gets major credit for that.
He did.
I actually saw that one.
Bob, you saw Pocahontas?
I did.
Yay! Shock.
Do you have a comment on Pocahontas?
Well, so aside from the fact that we're probably shutting the front door, that I've seen Pocahontas.
Oh, we'll do a proper review of Pocahontas.
Okay.
It's up
moving on.
Alright.
Okay, now we can go on to Ransom. Sorry.
Alright, 1996 Ransom, directed by Ron Howard, stars Mel Gibson, Gary Sinise, Lily Taylor, Delroy Lindo, Rene Russo, and some other people. Rich man starts kidnapped, and he cooperates with the police at first, but then tries a unique tactic against the criminals. So, I mean, pretty interesting turn of events. Who wants to kick off Ransom?
I don't remember the unique tactic against the criminals.
I think he goes on TV and says, I dare you to do something.
Okay, right. Yeah, I don't remember. I saw it a really long time since
I
saw that.
The gimmick is actually brilliant. The Ransom question is several $1 million, and the kidnappers are holding his young child captive, and he goes on television and says, on this table in front of me is the ransom money. Mm-hmm. Whoever brings me the kidnappers will receive this ransom. So he effectively puts a bounty out on their heads.
Mm-hmm. I think I vaguely remember that part now.
I thought this movie was kind of dull. I saw it way back when. I didn't revisit it for the show. So if I usually do it, I remember having such bad experiences.
Well, it's a formula movie. I mean,
it's Ron Howard. He puts me asleep every time.
Yeah, I mean, we're not looking at
Cinderella Man, Sleepy.
I agree. I'm not a huge fan of Ron Howard movies.
I mean, we saw Backdraft, Sleepy.
I liked this movie at the time. I remember seeing it in the theater.
I remember something they figured out that the kid peed on the floor or something. Who did it?
I remember.
Something really bizarre for the ending.
Clearly, we're all just riveted with the
kid. I mean, clearly, this is a rental movie, I think, if anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something I would have to revisit. I wouldn't. No.
Yeah, I'd say a week rent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Mel's good in it.
Mel's fine. Mel's good in everything.
I think this is a movie, there's nothing actively wrong with it, but there's not much that's compelling. Like, there's no one great performance. There's...
No. It's adequate. It's, you know, if it's on cable, watch it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'd say the same goes for the next movie on the list, which is Conspiracy. Do you have something to say, Bob?
I've watched it.
Conspiracy
Theory? Oh, you watched Conspiracy Theory.
Long time ago. I remember.
1997. Mel just cranks on 1 year, it seems. Jerry Fletcher is a man who sees conspiracies everywhere, but if you keep doing that long enough, sooner or later you're going to get one right. And he does. Directed again by Richard Donner, written by Brian Helgeland. Mel, Julia Roberts, Patrick Stewart is the villain. Go, Bob.
I just remember that I liked Julia Roberts and Mel Gibson. They seem to work well together in this movie. As you said, he sees conspiracy theories long enough that nobody believes them until Julia Roberts comes along, I guess. But they work well together in this movie. So.
I'm surprised they've never done a movie together before this.
No.
Well, Julia Roberts doing rom-coms forever.
Mm-hmm. I'm just saying they're two very big stars.
Guys, hello.
I'm waiting for someone to review it.
Oh, okay. Conspiracy, I thought it stunk. I thought it was absolutely horrible piece of crap. Mel Gibson raining like a lunatic. I was bored after 20 minutes. I'm like, I got a whole movie of this? And I didn't care. Yeah, he figured out one right, and the guys want to stop him. They chase him around the whole movie.
Copies of Catcher in the Rye figure prominently.
Or something. I can't. I tuned this out after even watching it. I couldn't tell you what happened. I just didn't care. I thought it disjointed. Hard to follow. Mel Gibson just going blah, 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 the whole movie. I just didn't care after a while.
I think the big issue with this movie is that somebody sat down in an office and said, you know, it'd be great. Let's get Mel Gibson and Julia Roberts in a movie.
That's right.
What's it about? Who cares?
Yeah.
Julia Roberts, Mel Gibson, movie.
Yeah, so I've seen those movies. Awful. Horribly script writing.
Karen, did you see it?
A while ago, it was... You know, it was an afternoon movie to rent.
Shut the door.
Shut the front door.
Be nice, Simon.
You can't be
That's
nice.
Not
it's just not in his DNA.
Dab's on the list.
A rare Patrick Stewart appearance outside of Star Trek and X-Men.
He did other movies.
American Dad.
Right. American Dad.
He was also the voice of Shakespeare in Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, God, now you're rolling your eyes at me.
Jonah, didn't you do Jonah the Whale type thing?
Move along. Okay.
All
right. Oh, boy, another Lethal Weapon in 1998, Richard Donner. Now Chris Rock is back in the feature here, is trying to be the new son-in-law, trying to expand so that we have four Lethal Weapons. Like, you know, last time we had three Lethal Weapons with Rene Russo, and now we have Chris Rock, and he's the fourth Lethal Weapon.
This one could have just not been made.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Really? I thought this was better than three.
This has got Jet Li in it.
Jet Li's North American debut is in this movie.
And he's going
to get a rat's ass.
He deserved a better debut vehicle, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
You know what?
This movie was such a sitcom. I mean, the climax of the movie is all of the cops in the Danny Glover character's daughter's delivery room.
That was the end of the movie.
Yes, but my point is that you have, it's like, let's get the cast and put them into a wacky situation. Hey, how about Chatterbox? Yeah.
Well, and I think, you know, Chris Rock was sort of on the rise at that time, and he was supposed to be this great comic foil in this movie, and it just didn't work. He wasn't funny.
Yeah, but Jet Li was fine. I thought the whole Chinese Mafia thing was decent. It wasn't that bad a movie, guys.
No.
I said it was great. I said, it's not that bad.
No, it's bad.
It's better than three.
No.
Yes.
No.
No.
I thought it was very free.
It all stands alone.
Three had a forgettable premise, but four was just not good at all.
Like, I don't think the performances were good. I don't think there was a plot. It was, I think it was really just, let's make another movie. Really.
Like Rush Hour 3. Did it need to be made?
Oh.
It's like when a TV series goes into, like, it's like, okay, we've had enough six seasons of this.
Yeah.
No, more like just phoning it in.
That was the last season.
Actually, if somebody could phone a shark in, that would be awesome. I would watch
Fonzie it. Fonzie jumping the shark in Happy Days.
There you go, exactly. It just,
Celebrate went on for seven more seasons after that.
Yeah.
Not with me.
I actually prefer Batman. The entire 11-year run.
Oh, well.
All right, payback. 1999.
I'm like, oh.
Porter is shot by his wife and best friend, and he's left to die. When he survives, he plots revenge. Based on Donald Westlake's first Parker novel, The Hunter, which was also the basis for the 1967 Lee Marvin Charles Dickinson film Point Blank. There are two versions of Payback out there. There's the theatrical cut and the director's cut, which came out in 2004. Directed by Brian Helvindland, who wrote Conspiracy Theory. It's based on the Westlake novel and has been adapted by Helvindland, and then someone named Terry Hayes did the version that made it onto the theatrical cut because there's significant differences, and Helgeland walked off the picture before it went to the theaters. It stars Mel Gibson, Greg Henry, Lucy Liu, Mary Abello, a few other people, Chris Christopherson. I like this movie a lot. Both versions I like. I think I like the theatrical cut a little bit better.
But I have a question, though.
Right.
For you, though.
Okay.
Why is the character Porter if in the novels he's Parker?
Well, it's the same thing as what happened with the Point Blank movie. They changed the name.
Why?
Well, I don't know. I think the thought is that maybe it has something to do with sequels. The Parker series is a long-running series of crime novels, and I don't think they wanted this to be seen as part of a series, necessarily. I don't know. I don't know, to be honest. It's partially a rights thing. And I think, actually, you know what? I do know why. Now that I remember.
Oh, the hamster's running in the wheel now. I saw it. Yeah.
Westlake would not give permission. Actually, Westlake wasn't his real name either. But anyway, he would not give permission. He said only in a film where he felt 100% confident that they knew what they were doing when he gave the blessing of using the Parker name. And for Darwin Cook's comic book adaptation, he consented to let him use Parker. For every other adaptation, he's declined. So there you go. Interesting, eh?
Yeah, not bad.
So I like this movie. Anyway, as I said, but I let other people.
Did you like Lucy Liu? Was that your favorite part? Yes, and then Lucy Liu.
I liked Point Blank better. This was an okay movie. It was just like, oh, it's another sort of wannabe noir. Meh.
I actually agree with you. I thought it was another wannabe noir. I enjoyed it. It's okay. I don't need to revisit it. I know it's borderline trash for me, but I kind of just liked it a bit. Because Kevin would say buy on this, and it just didn't. There's nothing in here to make me want to buy it, to watch it again, to own it.
See, for me, it's just that opening sequence.
You know, oh, I love the opening sequence.
Dun, 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 dun. You know, it's like crime music, and it's like he goes from nothing. He's basically dead and shot. He's revived in a doctor's office, kind of reminding me of the Joker. And
yes, I was thinking that.
And he goes back to New York, and then within minutes, he's got money in his pocket.
I love that. He takes the waltz from the guy, goes to eat dinner, and that's all done in the first 10 minutes, I would say. And he's getting designer suits, he's having dinner out, he's coming back.
It's just like the rest of the movie didn't live up to that, the promise of that
person. Exactly. That's exactly it.
Now, the director's cut is a little different from the theatrical cut, but anyway. You're yawning already, so... Did either of you guys see it?
No, Payback is actually the only Mel Gibson movie I have not seen.
And Bob didn't see it?
No, but he did see the next one.
Well, I figured he'd want to know what women want.
I think he already knows.
2000s film. After an accident, a chauvinistic executive, advertising executive, gains the ability to hear what women are really thinking. Directed by Nancy Myers, Mel Gibson, Helen Hunt, Marissa Tomei. Fun film, Bob.
I thought it was a very fun film. What, do you want to turn?
No, go ahead.
I'm sure all men would like to know what women want or what they're thinking, but if not, they should ask, even though they won't tell them. Anyway, not directly.
Oh,
you have to guess.
God.
I thought this was good. Mel Gibson and Helena Hunt working together. I enjoyed it. I don't know if I'd actually buy it, but I'd watch it again.
This was a glossy, fun fantasy. I really enjoyed this movie.
Yay.
And I mean, and so much of it depends on Mel Gibson's ability to react.
That's just what I was going to say. That
and
he's got,
great.
He's got the facial expressions, and I think, again, it shows that he can do comedy, you know, coming off of, you know, Payback and Lethal Weapon and all of these dramas and these action characters that he's played. I think it was really nice to see him do something different.
And it was also interesting because, what interested me about this movie is that because when he overhears what women are thinking, it's the disconnect between facial expression or the body language of the woman and the thoughts that he's hearing.
Yeah.
It's great.
It is. I think it was just a brilliant concept. Simon?
I thought it was okay. I thought it was a little bit of cheese, I'd call it. I get cheese for women so the men could go see the movie. It's a date movie.
Well, sure.
It's
there's nothing wrong with having a gimmick to get people to go see it.
I thought it was wrapped up a little too neat at the end. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I can see. Yeah,
this is a fantasy. Like, no one's ever going to mistake this for a deep, thoughtful examination of, you know.
Well, no, I kind of got that. You know, he had to relate to his daughter. That problem got solved. He relates to Helen Hunt. They got that problem solved.
But
he figured out the whole product placement. Everything was very neatly solved for him. But it's a Nancy Meyers film, so I don't
know
what to expect.
It's a comedy.
But it also
exactly.
kind of falls into the, you know, men are from Mars, women are from Venus theory, where men and women clearly think very differently and act very differently, and I think it follows that philosophy.
I have to say, the subplot with the daughter, I just bumped my head off. Because, you know, like, they make it very clear, very efficiently, that, you know, the character was kind of a absentee dad, and then all of a sudden, like, he's brought up real short. And I just laughed every time, you know, we got to listen in on her thoughts.
Come on, it was Eric Belfort from 24, so...
Well,
sorry. That's the point, boyfriend.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Is it past your bedtime? You're fading a little over there.
I'm losing it.
You're losing it.
Well, I don't know.
I like it. It's a cute movie.
We know you like it. I know you liked
it
at the time.
Sorry. I didn't realize that was annoying you there.
Not in any way,
so. Okay. So,
I say rant it.
Oh, yeah. No, I think it's a buy.
Ooh, I wouldn't go that far. It's on TV a lot. You can catch it on cable.
I know, but to get all the language intact, you need to buy.
True. Good point.
Some of the biggest laugh points are on... Sorry. Some of the biggest laughs are on words that might get
bleeped. Yeah, true.
Like shut the front door. Oh, that was
shut
the front door.
Stop
it. All right. That was a busy year for Mel 2000 because he also did The Patriot.
Yeah, how did he get
three movies in?
Four?
He did the voice of the rooster, Rocky, in Chicken Run.
Oh, there you go.
And that probably took him 3 weeks, 4 weeks in a recording studio.
Oh, not even.
Come on, a week?
Not even.
So, the Patriot, peaceful farmer Benjamin Martin, is driven to lead the colonial militia during the American Revolution when a sadistic British officer murders his son.
Dun, 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 dun.
Directed by Independence Day's Roland Emmerich.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Stars Mel Gibson, Heath Ledger, and Jolie Richardson.
Jason Isaacs. Tom
Wilkinson.
Yes, Darth English.
He's Darth English, yes. Thank you, someone. Disembodied voice.
Seriously, ask Santa for a mic for Christmas.
I will.
What did they think? Give us a review.
Anybody?
Did you see this one, Bob? You've never seen The Patriot?
I have.
Oh my god, this is like the What Did Bob Not See episode. Okay, go Simon.
Like the last one.
I enjoyed The Patriot. I was like on board with The Patriot. I was quite enjoying it, even though they played with history a little bit in this. Just odd parts here and there. I quite enjoyed this until the very end. The last scene, I had second last scene, I had a lot of problems with.
Really?
When the last fight scene, you know, they kind of slow it down. And
oh, that was stupid.
I'm like, come on, Roland, you had me. You know, I thought this was going to be kind of lame, and it got better. I was enjoying it more and more. I was really starting to like it at one point, and then it's just the come down near the end. I was enjoying the big battle scene. I'm like, okay, I'm on board. It's Braveheart all over again. I'm good. I'm like, really, Roland, I have an issue.
I mean, who is to know that it was basically, you know, Zack Snyder before there was Zack Snyder?
Yeah.
I mean, this movie, in retrospect, reminds me a lot of 300.
Absolutely. Or Braveheart.
Yeah. A lot of... I was really surprised when I first saw this movie how much violence was in it. I was not prepared for how violent it was. Because I thought, oh, it's going to be, an American Revolution movie. You know, I didn't realize they were going to go as far as they did.
I liked it, though. I mean, it scared me how grisly war was back then.
That's something I actually appreciated from the movie. I'm a big fan of this movie. Again, I like historical pieces, not just because of that. I liked that Benjamin Martin is a man who was a soldier, was a fighter, decided to give it up, but then, you know, needed to, I guess, catch revenge or get revenge for, you know, the murder of his son. And I liked that, you know, like he really struggled with that and, you know, was not wanting to be the soldier again. And I really think Heath Ledger was brilliant.
Heath Ledger is the key to this movie.
He stole this movie.
He excellent.
Was just brilliant.
And I think the most important line in the movie is, you know, Mel Gibson and Heath Ledger are having an argument. And at one point, you know, Mel Gibson just looks at him and says, "You are my child." And that for me, sold the movie. That one line.
I think, it's an action movie, it's a historical movie, but like you say, it has that core of a family and what this family has to deal with.
All the kids and how they all interrelate.
And the mute daughter was just, that was a great aspect of what's going on. I really enjoyed it.
You didn't think that was a little Independence Day where you have to have all these multiple characters and little storylines?
No, I didn't. I didn't.
Sides and stuff like that? Okay.
No, I didn't.
I like the Patriot quite a bit. I agree with the ending being a bit much, and I don't know. I almost think it's a buy.
I own it. I do. I definitely.
I'll back you up. I'd buy it.
It's a cheap Blu-ray. I just haven't gotten it. It's a $10 Blu-ray.
What's up with that, Kevin?
I don't know.
Actually, this is a movie that I think, again, like watching the extra features on it would be really fun.
I agree.
Because this is another great big movie with great big battle scenes, a lot of period weapons, period costumes.
Yeah.
This was a big undertaking.
Yeah, very impressive.
Now, just out of curiosity, has anybody seen The Million Dollar Hotel? All right.
Yeah, I couldn't find a copy.
I remember seeing it years ago, but I couldn't remember what it's about for the life of me.
It was a very bizarre movie. I found it very...
It's written by Bono.
It was.
Yeah.
Bono.
I found it very hard to get into, and very hard to keep my attention. I kept, like, drifting and dozing and, you know, wondering if the laundry was done, and it really just... if you read the little, your blurb, which we have on our little handy-dandy sheet, tragicomic, romantic whodunit set in a rundown hotel which plays host to mentally ill people too poor to afford medical insurance. I think, that interests me. It's very intriguing, but it just didn't work. I don't know. I can't even explain it because I couldn't follow it.
So in other words... As a screenwriter, Bono makes a very good rock star.
I think he needs to keep his day job. Yeah, I really do. And, the fact you couldn't find it, maybe there's a reason you can't find it out there.
Yeah, I looked. Lover didn't have one.
I don't remember it in the theaters at all. I only remember it in Blockbuster because I worked there. And
I remember renting it with friends and just, it was forgettable.
Very, because I couldn't follow it, so I can't even tell you what it really ended up being.
So what we're basically looking at here is a giant vanity project for Bono?
I guess, when you look at, the Wim Wenders, a director that's well-known, and Bono, it has a lot of great selling features, and the fact that it didn't get distributed in theaters, and it went straight to video... It was kind of surprising, because if you read that, you would say, oh my gosh, we have to go see that. But yeah, clearly didn't work.
Yeah. All right, well, Mel's next film was 2002's We Were Soldiers, which is the story of the first major battle of the American phase of the Vietnam War. So after the French pulled out and the Americans pulled in, this is what happened. Directed by Randall Wallace, based on the book by Harold Moore and Joseph Calloway. Screenplay by Randall Wallace, stars Madeline Gibson, Madeline Stowe's his wife, and Greg Kinnear.
Oh, I forgot Greg Kinnear was in this.
He's in it.
Damn, I forgot that.
So who, has anybody not seen this one?
I read the book. Okay. I just never got around to seeing it.
Mm-hmm. What do you want to
say? I'm just waiting. I love this movie.
Yeah?
I thought this movie was fantastic. I don't usually like war movies. I usually find them boring, dull. I thought this depiction of war was awesome. I thought that John Hamm's in it, too.
Oh, yeah.
And you only
see him. Oh, God, I forgot that, too.
He's only in it for a couple of seconds. I'm like, oh, my God, it's John Hamm. I just love
this. You should recognize him now, but not then.
No, there's no way I would recognize him. I thought that, I mean, I know very little about the Vietnam War, surprisingly. I know more about other wars. I don't even know why the French pulled out. When they opened the movie, the French, whatever, those guys just get decimated, slaughtered. I'm like, wow, this is pretty graphic.
Mm.
And then they had the American troops coming in the helicopters and the Viet Cong coming out of the cave.
Yeah.
And it was just like slaughtering guys. I don't know how truthful it was.
Right.
The book is very truthful.
It was very well shot. I thought the battle scenes were excellent. Mm-hmm. I thought the movie was going to be slow at the beginning when they're prepping them for war, but that was it. The pacing was perfect. I liked the way they sent the taxi driver was coming in with the slips, and the woman said, no, let me deal with this, and she took on his wife.
Mm-hmm.
This movie blew me away, how much I liked it. Absolutely was shocked how well it was done. The cinematography should have won something. It was beautiful to look at.
Cool.
Absolutely excellent.
I agree with that.
I remember liking the movie when I saw it in the theaters, but not something I'd want to revisit. I think maybe the graphic violence and the war angle. It was interesting, though, and he's a hard-nosed John Wayne type, you know, commander.
Oh, he did a great job, though. I mean, Americans wanted that place.
Well, I think it's interesting is that just the book really gives a sense of they had no idea what they were getting into.
Mm-hmm.
I think they thought that they'd just go in, clear out a few insurgents, and be home, you know, by the weekend.
Sounds like World War One. They thought the war would be over by Christmas.
Yeah, it's very much the same thing. Like the Vietnam War had actually been going on for like 20 years by the time the Americans showed up. And, you know, and they just completely underestimated the Viet Cong. They, you know, the Viet Cong viewed the war in national terms. They wanted independence from colonial powers. And the Americans looked at them and said, oh, these are commies. We can't let this country fall to communists. And they didn't realize that the Vietnamese were willing to die to the last man to get independence for their country. They just did not get it at all.
I didn't realize it was a book as well.
No, it was based on, it's a memoir.
Yeah. Yeah, I did not know that.
I thought it was We Were Soldiers Once.
And Young. That's the full title of the book.
Yeah, at the end of the movie, it pans over everybody that was in Vietnam. It was very touching at the end of this movie.
Loss of innocence, really, in a lot of ways, for the Americans.
Oh, yeah.
So, because it shows the Vietnam side as well.
It does. It also
rare for an American movie, really.
I thought it was really strange that this first time, like, you know, I always read Vietnam as the first TV war, they call it.
Yeah, because they had footage.
And then
every day.
See the guys, like, they have that one guy who says, I'm not a soldier, I'm just a writer, and he's, is that Greg Kinnear? No, it's not Greg Kinnear, is it? Might be Greg Kinnear. And he's writing, I think it is Greg Kinnear, and they have that. And at the end of the movie, you see all the reporters at the battlefield. I'm like, very strange to me just to see that in a movie, because you don't see that in most of the movies. I mean, we watch Braveheart, you don't see it. We watch Patriot, you don't see that. But here, you have just regular citizens there after the battle interviewing Mel Gibson about the battle.
Right. And the other thing about the Vietnam War, it was the first war to be broadcast on television in color.
Yes.
World War II footage, overwhelmingly black and white, often no sound. It's distancing. Like Vietnam, you were seeing awful scenes of carnage and violence at the 6 o'clock news every day.
I know.
Yeah.
And we didn't see that with the Iraq War, so maybe, I mean, we did see it, but not to that point of hardcore violence.
They learned their lesson with Vietnam.
Control on media.
Yeah, they definitely didn't. They said, okay, we did this, they did that, but we didn't see bodies and all that.
Which is interesting, because I think now in the, you know, the day of immediacy with the internet and things, I think we're really back to that graphic aspect of the kinds of media that's out there with, you know, be it war, be it, you know, gangland shootings, be it almost anything, the degree of graphicness is out there for anybody. And I'm not saying I believe in censorship, that's not where I'm going, but I'm just saying that it is out there and it is readily available. Whereas, like you say, with the Iraq war, there was maybe a bit more of a control, a hold back on that, and maybe not, I guess, illustrate how bad it really is.
Well, I mean, I think it was interesting that during the Arab Spring uprisings earlier this year, they tried to shut down the internet.
Exactly.
Okay, cool. Well, next movie on our list is 2002's other Mel movie, which is Signs, directed by M. Night Shyamalan.
Shyamalan Ding Dong?
Written by M. Night Shyamalan, and stars Mel
Shyamalan
Gibson.
Shyamalan Ding Dong.
Jacqueline Phoenix as his brother. And the Fonz. No, Rory Culkin is one of the kids.
Fonz in this one?
A family living on a farm finds a mysterious crop circle in their backyard, and it suggests something more frightening is going on. And it is. It's aliens. Anyway, so...
What about Cherry Jones? You didn't mention her.
No, I didn't. I didn't mention Cherry Jones as the sheriff, right? Are we hot? What's going on here?
It's warm in here.
It's just warm in this place, that's all.
All right, Signs. I love it. Awesome. One of my favorite movies of the Mel genre.
How did you stay awake for it?
Are you serious?
I love this movie. This is so awesome. Swing Away. I love it. All the setup in advance, and it's just creepy.
Come on, the strikeout thing.
I like that slow, dread build-up. I saw this movie on television. I would have just been on the ceiling if I'd seen this in the theater.
It's like, really? What is it? What's going on? Like, you're thinking, what did we just see? Yeah. Did we see an alien? What was it?
Where
did
I go?
And then that scene when they're watching on the television and the brother's in the thing, he's like, oh, my God. And he jumps up when he sees the alien walk across, casually walk across. Which is kind of funny if you were just watching this. But given what was going on TV and the crop circles and all that stuff, you jump with him as he reacts to it. I thought this was a great suspense film.
I'm trying to figure out if I was still awake for that.
And then when he goes to M. Night's house and he's got one trapped in the pantry and the hand comes out and he's looking at it with a knife. Oh, I thought it was great.
I thought it was kind of dull.
Well, it's a bit like the original version of War of the Worlds from the 50s, where you don't really see the aliens and so much as you see the effects of the aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see aliens and then you're going to freak out.
I don't know. I think by the time this movie came out, I was expecting so much more from the director.
Yes.
I think it's not so much that it was a bad movie. I think my expectations were bigger than the movie delivered for me. Do I need to buy it? No. Would I watch it again? Probably.
When you're having insomniac one night and completely right to sleep, but you forgot to shut the front door.
That's in Scarborough. I have to shut and walk triple times the front door.
Mm-hmm.
It's not bad.
See, to me, this is a must-buy. And I have bought it. So,
probably four times over.
A couple times. Like DVD and then Blu-ray. It's... M. Night did three great films. One is Sixth Sense. The other is Unbreakable. And then this one. And he hasn't been able to recreate that Hitchcock magic.
I agree.
Yeah. So, The Happening... The Village was not good.
Lady of the... Lake,
oh,
the breakdown
the water in the water,
water
or whatever.
Yeah,
the
pool one.
Yes,
was it $2 sale blockbuster?
I don't know. I haven't opened it.
The Last Airbender.
Bad.
Which is on the list of something to.
Oh wait, I remember it.
So.
I just think Signs is just too dull for me. I do try to like Signs.
And I like the message of Signs. I like that it's family and faith.
Could you explain something to me?
What?
Okay, these aliens are afraid of water. Okay? Mm-hmm. So they happen to end up on a planet that's 70 or 80% water.
Right, so they go to farmland, interior.
Okay, and then they go to a house and all it has is water?
No, they go for the kid.
Why do they want the kid?
I don't know, breeding or I don't know.
Like, I couldn't quite figure out why the aliens were here. I never got that.
I don't think I really thought that hard about it, to be honest.
Well, I was a little confused. And why is Cherry Jones in this movie? She's so dull. And everybody's just like, hi. Yeah, I think some kids are playing in the
Cherry Jones is a renowned stage actress, and sometimes somebody who's just got it on stage comes across flat on screen.
Maybe. Yeah, I can see that.
And also, I just like the idea that they're so isolated. I mean, it's one of the reasons the movie The Birds works so well.
I love The Birds.
But it's just like the idea that you're all alone in the middle of nowhere, hours away from the nearest help, and something wants to get you.
Yeah.
It could be birds, it could be aliens, it could be something completely different, but it's the idea that you are alone with small, vulnerable children, and no one's coming to help you.
Well, and I also like the bit about Mel's wife when she died. And he lost his faith over this, the fact that God took her away. But what was interesting was that she saw something. How did she manage to see the future? And what happened? She was telling him, she was giving him a warning to look for these certain signs.
Right.
And it was an interesting message about faith and about, you know, he's lost his faith completely, but, you know, it's all about redeeming that faith, coming back. And believing that sometimes there's more to life than what there is.
Yes, no, that's a good point.
That was
definitely
a nice message. And, anyway, so we differ on this one. So there's a big gap in his acting career, an 8-year gap, and during that time he directed the very brutal Passion of the Christ, which recreates the whole crucifixion of Jesus.
In Aramaic.
And then
Simon, have you not seen The Passion of the Christ?
No.
Future podcast.
I haven't either.
No.
It's on my table.
You didn't
see it either? Well, it's not on the list. I've seen it. Okay. Have you seen it?
I have, yes.
Yeah. So it's not, I'm not really considering it part of this because he directed it and not even starred. Just like the animated stuff. And then he also did a film called Apocalypto in 2006, which was done completely in another language as well. Both of these movies were done not in English, in a sense, right? They're translated films.
You didn't see Apocalypto either, Simon? Oh, did you hear that, Bob?
I did.
You did, excellent.
I heard.
Excellent.
Now, we did review for this podcast
because
Edge of Darkness.
I think we have three other movies he hasn't seen either, so anyway, moving on, bye.
All right, you'll have to give me those names later.
We did review Edge of Darkness for the show
a
while ago, and that's where Homicide Direct Detective Thomas Craven investigates the death of his activist daughter, uncovers not only her secret life, but also the disease that she had, a corporate cover-up, and government collusion that attracts an agent tasked with cleaning up the evidence, directed by Green Lantern's Martin Campbell. Stars Mel Gibson, Ray Winstone, and Danny Houston. And who's seen this one?
We've reviewed it on that show.
Karen, what do you think of it?
Work for me. I don't want
you weren't around for that show.
Yeah. I wasn't? Okay. No. Not a particular favorite of mine from Mel's career. And again, it got a lot of hype, you know, its first movie back in 8 years. So maybe, again, my expectations were bigger than the film delivered. But at the same time, I just don't really think the film delivered.
Right.
I can respect, you know, him as a father wanting to get to the bottom of it. But, just...
Is
not
it?
Believable.
Okay.
I thought it was decent.
I thought it was average, not great.
Let's go.
I expected it to be more like Taken.
Yes.
Yeah, me
and
too.
It was not at all like Taken.
Don't
it
worry,
was very
Taken
slow.
Is coming up for you.
Right, okay. So the last one, I don't think many of us have seen the most recent Mel Gibson effort. Oh, Karen and Simon have. And that's called The Beaver. Came out this year, directed by and starring Jodie Foster. Also stars Anton Yelchin, who played Chekhov.
And unfortunately, there are no nuclear vessels in this movie.
You're right. this disembodied voice came out of nowhere. A troubled husband and executive adopts a beaver hand puppet as his sole means of communicating. So, Karen, how was the beaver?
I like this movie. I think it's unfortunate that Mel Gibson's life imploded at the time that this movie came out and clearly affected its box office. I think he was a very believable, depressed, and lonely, and troubled individual. I think Anton Yelchin playing his son, I could clearly relate to him not wanting to have the genetic traits of his father, you know, making all those post-it notes and sticking them on the wall to see if those are traits he's having or not having. Like, I could feel his pain, and I found that really, really, I mean, disturbing, but at the same time, I could just feel it. It really brought me to tears. I really wish more people had seen this movie, because I thought it was brilliantly done.
Because when I saw I've not seen this movie. I mean, when I saw the poster and I saw that puppet, I was just like, oh, you gotta be kidding.
You know, again, it's how you sell it. And like we were talking about on an earlier episode, maybe that's not the poster or the cover it should have had.
Because it looks like a wacky comedy.
It does. And I think that's clearly not what it is in any way, shape, or form. It's very depressing and sad. And this man is very disturbed. But I think the performances were really, I really loved it. I did.
So let's go a little bit further in the plot. I mean, okay. Mel Gibson runs a toy company.
He runs a toy company.
And the toy company's going into the ground. Like, it is over. He's depressed. He can't think anymore. And then his marriage is falling apart. And I think, where does he find it? He finds the puppet somewhere.
He finds the puppet in the trash.
In the trash. And pulls it out and develops an identity. So he becomes the puppet, pretty much.
And the puppet will speak for him.
Puppet's the only one speaking. He takes the puppet to bed. He has sex with his wife with the puppet.
Takes it to work.
The puppet does all the interviews.
The
puppet is Gibson.
The puppet runs the company.
The company only does the puppet. And
so wait a second. So is the beaver a separate identity? Like, are we talking about
no.
a split personality
no.
here?
The beaver is Mel.
The beaver is Mel. He can only talk through the puppet.
Yeah, that's like a Batman villain.
It is, yes, reminds me of Why the Ventriloquist. But it is fabulously done. I'm not going to ruin the ending because I want Kevin and you to see this. I do not get moved to movies. I see more movies than the guys in this room and girls. I think they would say, and I was moved by this movie.
Really?
It amazed me how much it touched me that Mel Gibson and Jodie Foster could get emotion out of me that I didn't see coming. And I think Cherry Jones is in this too. I think, doesn't she play his helper at the toy factory, isn't she?
Oh, that is right. She ends up running the company.
She ends up running the company.
He becomes incapable.
He becomes incapable. And, I mean, Anton Yelchin does become his father in this movie, and you can see it as he punches
his head in the wall.
In the wall. And Anton, doesn't he write papers to other people? Isn't that the plan?
He's a brilliant individual, yeah. And, again, there's always that fine line between brilliance and insanity. Bob's looking at his hand, so that's kind of disturbing. But it's
talking about the line between brilliance and insanity.
Pretty much.
Well, because like based on the poster, I thought that there was going to be a movie about the very fine line between stupid and clever. And
No,
but this sounds really dark.
It's dark.
It's awesome. I could not believe this. And more people didn't go see this. Every critic review I read said this movie was excellent. Mm-hmm. I 100% agree with everything I read. This movie is fantastic.
But, you know, Mel Gibson, and we have to talk about this, because, I mean, Mel Gibson did have some personal issues.
You know what?
But a movie star, you sell your image, and now his image has changed.
Through these
two episodes, we've been talking about how versatile an actor he is. He does comedy. He does action. He does drama. He does history, and he's very, very good at all of it.
If Rodney Downey Jr. can come back, and Rodney Downey Jr. is a big Gibson fan now, say, give the guy a chance. He's a good actor.
Did you read that little interview? There was a little blurb in the paper where Robert Downey Jr. does come to the defense of Mel Gibson.
So is Whoopi Goldberg.
And all kinds of people that have worked for him. And Jodie Foster has been in his corner, you know, forever. And I think it's really unfortunate that as a society or as a movie-going public, that a person's career and the worth of a movie is judged on a person's personal life.
Which I never do. I mean, Lilo is just a mess. Lindsay, I mean, really, go away.
Yeah.
I mean, I think she's one that had a decent career coming ahead of her and threw it away, literally just trashed it.
So I don't think
she's a bad actress, and she's a horrible career. And Mel Gibson's an excellent actor, and after The Beaver, I want more.
I do. And
We Were Soldiers is, sorry to cut you off.
No, that's okay.
It's still an excellent movie. Size is a Shyamalan ding-dong doing his thing, and Edge of Darkness, I think, was pretty solid. I want more Mel.
But again, I am strictly playing devil's advocate. And believe me, like, this is not me trashing Mel Gibson. But you have to say, he was, you know, he beat the mother of his infant child. And that's not, you know, driving while intoxicated. That's not shoplifting. Like, that's something that actually crosses a line.
Well,
I'm not condoning it. I mean, it's wrong. It shouldn't have been done.
Look at him quite the same way again.
But
his reputation may be rehabilitated, but it will never quite be the same.
I see what you're saying, but I don't go see the movies thinking about this man beat his wife. That's not my issue. That's between him and that and society.
And I think you've also got to look, as we talk about often on this show, what part does the media play in that?
Yeah, it's all media.
And you know, we weren't there. None of us in this room were there. I'm not saying it didn't happen. I'm not saying it did happen the way it was reported, either. And I think that, again, is, if you're a fan of movies, as this group of people profess to be, I think we of all people have to stand up for the work that we are seeing on the screen, and not necessarily the individuals. And that's it. Just my opinion. I'm not professing to speak for anybody else in this room, but if you want to see a good movie, you have to see The Beaver.
I absolutely agree. I'll recommend. I'm sure it'll be on Blu-ray for $5 because nobody's going to buy it.
Right. Well, you can buy it on DVD for like $2 or $3.
I would strongly recommend seeing it.
Okay. I'll take that into account.
It'll just be interesting to see where his career goes in the next 2 years, because the next 2 years, no matter where you stand on the issue, are going to be crucial.
Well, I also would hope, based on his directorial career as well, he's got enough money behind him that he can frickin' make his own movie.
He is.
Ending
a movie about some Jewish guy. I'm sorry, I can't remember the name.
I'm not aware of it. I'll have to look it up.
And some other guy's making the same movie, another one of those Hollywood ones.
Okay.
Two people are making the same movie. I guess I should have came more prepared.
You mean like Armageddon and Deep Impact?
Yes, the Armageddon, the volcano.
Two Snow White movies?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And
but
whoever
makes
the theater first wins, usually.
Yeah, and I think, honestly, he's got enough money behind him, he's got enough creativity and enough talent that he can bring his own career back, and hopefully the movie going public will respect the work that's out there.
I think The Beaver will get more praise as it goes along.
First off, I want to say, I think he's very talented, and you've seen him tackle every type of subject. But I think the thing that he's most well known for are those action comedies. And do you think he has it in him to do more, or has he moved? Is he too old for that?
The Harrison Ford question.
Yeah, you know, Harrison Ford isn't really a good leading man for action comedies.
If they can make another Johnny English,
seen it.
Then I think they can make another Mel Gibson.
Should they make another Johnny English is the question.
Well, when we review that upcoming episode,
should they make Lethal Weapon 5?
They've
been discussing it for years.
So I think they will.
Well, there's two very old men now. They couldn't possibly be active police officers given their ages. They'd both be retired. They'd have to be dealing with their kids as cops.
Well, they could always do this Space Cowboys route and just have them pulled in for one last.
Yeah, they're definitely too old for that shit. So we've seen ups and downs. We've seen some great movies. We've seen some pretty mediocre movies. Favorite, Mel Gibson?
I think We Were Soldiers pretty much impressed me.
That's your favorite one of all.
I'll have to look at the other one. On this one, it's We Were Soldiers, Deep Brave Heart for me. Which I can't believe I'm saying. I love We Were Soldiers. or Braveheart.
Karen?
I like both.
I would have to.
I'd have to look at the other list, remember.
Yeah, I don't remember the other list.
Well, let's say the last 20 years. 15 years or whatever.
We were soldiers. I think better,
years.
More in Braveheart for me.
Mine would be a toss up between the Patriot and Maverick and the Beaver. Mm-hmm.
Oh, the Beaver. I love the Beaver.
I mean, because I've seen it most recently.
Yeah, but I can't watch that again. It was just too depressing for me.
I think I could watch it again. I really do.
But I can accept why you're watching it again, since we've actually watched this film and told other people to watch it. They should.
I could. I think I could watch it again. The Patriot, because of the historical context. I love the costumes. I love the battle.
And the strong emotional core of the story.
And Maverick, because it made me laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd have to say it's, for me, it's a toss-up between Maverick and Braveheart. Two very great movies for very different reasons.
Right. Kevin?
Well, I'd have to go with Maverick as being my favorite from this group. And then probably Signs.
Oh, God.
And then Braveheart is my third. The worst would probably be... what do I consider the worst out of this batch? I would probably go with Lethal Weapon 4.
Great.
As being the most painful...
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? I would watch that before I would watch Man Without a Face.
Well, it's just Man Without a Face.
Or $1 Million Hotel, which are forgettable movies in my opinion.
Yeah. And based on our first episode, I'd say my favorite is Lethal Weapon 2.
Yeah. I think that's the best of the Lethal Weapons for sure.
Yeah, I don't remember what else was on that episode.
Lymphatic Community.
Love that movie.
Well, it's like all Road Warriors and stuff like that.
Road Warriors, okay, go ahead. That one, remember. Road Warriors is the best one.
Yeah, I'm there. I like the post-apocalyptic Mel, you know, beating people up. You know, what can I say? I like my radioactive.
Oh, and Gallipoli. Gallipoli was also, I love Gallipoli.
Mm-hmm.
That's a movie I'm looking forward to seeing.
Good night.
And You're Living Dangerously.
Good night.
I think, Bob, any comments?
No, Bob's done.
Bob is done. All right, well, I'm Kevin.
I'm Simon.
I'm Karen.
In her...
death.
And if they make it...
Simon forces us to watch it.
Even apparently not, given the number of movies you didn't see.